Hello, everyone. I'm doing this whole episode off the top of my head. I'm in that kind of mood today. So I thought about also including the sexual surrogate therapy adult films of mine to have it tailor made for those who've had to endure adultery, infidelity, cheating, extramarital affairs, romantic affairs, online affairs, emotional affairs, sexual affairs, secretive extramarital sex, and your spouse having an office spouse behind your back. And I thought of that because of many people are sexually traumatized by the reality of that of somebody else and other people. They know what your spouse is like sexually. They know what your spouse's body is like unclothed. And not all sexual traumas are sex crimes. For example, if you regret having sex with a person and they were a toxic person and you just figured it out, even though they committed no sex crimes, you did not commit any sex crimes, that is a kind of sexual trauma, because it hurts to know that I shared my flesh with a hard-hearted charlatan this whole time. So a lot of people don't think of sex how you can have sexual pain, but not all sexual pain comes from rape culture. Some sexual pain comes from not knowing who somebody really is, or sometimes we do, but we share our bodies with them anyway, hoping that our denialism will overcome their toxicity, but usually that's not what happens. In fact, their toxicity is amplified partly because of the mutual body sharing that is horrendous in this part. So sexual surrogate therapy adult films, I want to dedicate that to people who have gone through these things, that were basically those having sex with somebody else or others, y'all committed, but no, there's no permission from you, as well as people who have sexual regret, sexual remorse, sexual habits, sexual hurt, sexual hangups that are still sexually plaguing them. I want to do sexual surrogate therapy adult films that help them out. I also want to help people to understand that my sexual surrogate therapy adult films, workplace culture, because I know many people, okay, we like the adult films idea part, people sexually struggling, but how will workers be treated there? Well, I'll tell you. I decided that I want abuse survivors to be a part of the executive leadership. Not because they're abuse survivors, but I feel like in order for me to make therapeutic erotica, in order for me to make therapeutic pornography, as I call it, I feel like abuse survivors know best in how it should go and shouldn't go. So I would have the abuse survivors creating egalitarian traditions, egalitarian policies, egalitarian ideas, egalitarian ideals, egalitarian institutions, egalitarian systems, egalitarian conduct, egalitarian rules, egalitarian regulations, egalitarian procedures, egalitarian policies, egalitarian curriculum, egalitarian syllabuses, egalitarian credentials, and egalitarian criteria, egalitarian missions, egalitarian goals, egalitarian statements, egalitarian values, egalitarian principles, egalitarian history, egalitarian who we are. And egalitarianism means everyone having the same human rights, civil and political rights, economic, social, and cultural rights, equal opportunity, everyone having the same equity, right? I feel like I want to create a healthy workplace where, yes, people, employee of the month, and safe parking, and free parking, I should say, and including making sure that every week meals that are healthy and snacks that are healthy are provided. Make sure that everyone has healthy legal representation. No one signs anything without business experts, legal experts looking over the contracts to make sure there's no crimes being committed and no human rights abuses being enshrined. I would create a culture of empathy in the workplace where people of color, people with disabilities, people of gender and sexual diversity, indigenous peoples, black folks, immigrants would definitely also be a part of my executive leadership. I also want to, last thing I said about the positive workplace, basically, it's going to be a stress-free workplace, no workplace stress, no workplace incivility, no workplace harassment, no abusive supervision, no violence of all kinds, no crimes of all kinds, no abuse of all kinds, no traumas of all kinds, no dirty politics, no office politics. No victimization of all kinds. Everyone is going to be respected and protected. No one's going to be forced to do what they don't want to do. No one's going to be paid more for having the kind of sex they normally wouldn't have. And no one would have any grievances or gripes about the workplace because mine would basically be filled with healthy boundaries. No rigid and collapsed boundaries allowed. Last thing I'll say is that the least of these will have the final say in terms of what happens in the workplace, the adult film workplace. Also because I don't want to traffic in stereotypes, misrepresentations, caricatures, misportrayals, and misdepictions. So, in a nutshell, basically a workplace where there's no tabloid talk show kind of bullshit occurring, basically. I also want to do sexual therapy adult films for those who do polygamy, polygynandry, polyamory, open relationships, them too, because there are people within those human relational arrangements who have sexual storms just like those within monogamous unions. I also wanted to showcase consensual, deliberate, lawful, reasonable voyeurism and exhibitionism, not the kind that means indecent exposure. I just wanted to say that. I now want to talk to you a little bit more about my sexual past. So people may be wondering, how do you know for certain that you didn't get any of these women pregnant? This is what happened. I had the kind of arrangement with the women that if you get pregnant, let me know. There's no reason to hide a child from me. And they agreed because these were the type of women that they would have gotten abortions if it was other guys. They told me this. But they said to me that they would never get abortions if I impregnated them. Because they said, I don't believe in terminating a good, you know, good man's babies. I don't believe in terminating pregnancies from good men. They said from these jokers and bums, that's what they said, they would have easily terminated as soon as they found out they're pregnant. But when it came to me, they were like, hey, once I'm pregnant, I'm having the baby no matter what. None of them ever got pregnant by me. How I know for certain? I remember they had sad looks on their face when they told me that we weren't going to be a family because they went to the doctors and the doctor told them, no, you're not pregnant. And these were actually positive results. What I mean by that is it was a certain that I wasn't going. It was 100% affirmed medically that I wasn't going to be a father. Maybe I should have said it was a negative result. Sometimes I have to catch myself as a podcaster, but you know what I'm saying, that it was a true test and the result was actually the truth because they tested multiple times. And each time it turned out that I'm not the father, not to make Maury as a pun, but that's what occurred. And I can tell that I wasn't the father because they were sad. They were crying. We were crying together about it. I was sad too. And if they would have came to me happily, then I would have known for certain, okay, I'm a biological father, but it never happened. I never impregnated anybody. They would have told me. They were upfront with me about a lot of things, and that would have been something they would have really been upfront with me too. If they would have gotten abortion, they were upfront. Some of them have had abortions, and they flat out told me. Some of them have been pregnant before, and they flat out told me. So it would not have been any different if it came to me. Now, I don't have any outside children. I don't have any love child type of people in this world. I don't have any children within wedlock. I've never been married. I don't have any children out of wedlock because, you know, the women I was involved with, they showed me the test results of their pregnancies. So I don't have any woman pregnant. I've never impregnated any girl when I was a teenager sleeping with girls my age, and girls in my age bracket. None of the statutory rapists of my adolescence ever got pregnant either. Every female I ever slept with consensually all took pregnancy tests, and they were always negative, and they were tested multiple times. They all were. And I was never the father. The statutory rapist tried to be fam with me, but I always outsmarted them by the pullout method. And there were times where they were trying to hold my penis in their vagina, and I would just yank it away in the nick of time early. Just, oh, no. And this is when they were trying to hold it in a little longer so they could get pregnant. At first it was in, but when I figured that it, meaning my penis, in, meaning their vagina, the minute that I tried to figure out, oh, they're trying to get me to pregnant them, I quickly yanked it out. So all the statutory rapist women were angry that they never had my child, never had my babies. None of them got pregnant. None. They were the type that also would have said something if there was a pregnancy, they would have told me. They would not have kept that quiet. That's how I know for certain. And I don't glorify any of those parts of my life. I may have said it before, but I gave some new details because I just wanted to reassure people that I'm not a deadbeat. I'm not an absent father. I'm not the type you take to child support because I don't impregnate anybody. When I was forced to be a statutory rapist, there was never any birth control at all. When I was with girls my age bracket, adolescent years, most part, there were condoms. I mean, they had people, they knew people worked in clinics who would, you know, supplied them with free condoms when nobody was looking. And that's how I was able to get the condoms. Me and the women, when I was in sexually involved with them as a man, sometimes they had female and male condoms shipped to their homes, so that's how I was able to have mine. They used their female condoms sometimes. It was mostly me. Usually it was me, the one wrapping up, if you catch my drift. When I look at the fact that the women, every now and then they purchase condoms because they would sometimes forget, oh yeah, I got free condoms being mailed to my home. So they purchased condoms for me about a handful of times. Then they go, I gotta remember, oh yeah, I got free condoms shipped to my home. I'm gonna stop buying condoms. So that's why they stopped buying condoms for me, because they all were like, well, we're actives, and whoever I'm with is also active with me. So that's how they would get eventually free condoms for them. Plus, you know, the grown women were also taking birth control pills, birth control shots. I mean, now you fully understand why I never impregnated anybody. The low percentages of pregnancy, that's why I never impregnated anybody. Now, what have I learned about my sexual past? Because I officially got it all out. What I learned from is that I share these stories not to amplify, not to magnify, not to glorify any parts of my sexual past, because I'll say for the last time, I despise all parts of my sexual past. I do not want anyone to duplicate any part of my sexual past. And I don't even duplicate any part of my sexual past either. No one needs to duplicate any part of my sexual past. So, it taught me, well, should I say I taught myself, that I did not know how to sexual vetting. I didn't know how to go about that. Like, for example, I didn't know how to consider consequences of sex. I didn't know how to say no to someone sexually for all the right reasons. I didn't know how to say yes to someone sexually for all the right reasons. I didn't fully understand the concept of being what is called a sensitive lover, even though I tried my best to be one subconsciously. I grew up in a culture where people were sexually compulsive. They would sexually jump into things. Without sexual logic. they were very much into the sexual version of monkey see, monkey do. They were a bunch of sexual ventriloquist dummies, sexual talking parrots. That's what the crime world was like for me. Or should I say against me. And I didn't know how to stay away from certain sexually dangerous people. I didn't know how to stay away from sexually dangerous people. I didn't know how to I didn't know how to understand sexual mixed signals. I didn't understand sexual mixed emotions. I didn't understand sexual mixed bags. I didn't understand sexual mixed feelings. I didn't understand sexual warning signs. I didn't understand sexual red flags. I didn't understand sexual red herrings. I didn't understand sexual bullshit detectors. I didn't understand sexual lie detectors. I didn't fully understand sexual temptations. I didn't understand fully understand sexual influences. I didn't understand sexual stranger danger. I didn't understand sexual danger zones. I didn't understand the sexual walls came tumbling down. And I didn't understand fully, I didn't fully understand sexually scandalous folks out here. I didn't understand. I wasn't fully well educated on these subjects. If I were, the affairs would never happen. If I never was around criminals growing up as a kid, especially living with one, my mom's brother, I never would have had affairs with anyone. I never would have been anybody's side piece, that's for sure. You know, I just feel like I didn't understand sexual cautionary tales. I didn't understand sexual satire. I didn't understand sexual ulterior motives. I didn't understand sexual personal gain. I didn't understand that people weaponizing sex. I didn't understand people trivializing sex. I didn't understand people minimizing sex. I didn't understand people providing sensationalism, salacious ways of going about sex. I didn't know. That's why I was the side piece of many women, and I will always be sad, mad, frustrated, and aggravated by each and every aspect of my sexual past. You could hear the unhappiness about all my sexual past in my voice. This is how I sound when I feel melancholic. I don't have any suicidal ideations. I don't have any homicidal ideations, so there's no need to worry about me. But I have really had to learn that when it came to sex, I didn't understand myself. I didn't understand other people sexually too. And I'm not excusing anything. I'm just being honest about what I didn't consider, because I wasn't taught to consider any of these things sexually. I've learned the difference between private sexual relationships and secret sexual relationships. One is healthy because there's no sexual tabloid talk show behavior attached to it. And the other is centered on a mixture of psychosis and paranoia, because there is a lack of sexual moral excellence occurring. So private sexual relationships are healthy. Secret sexual relationships are unhealthy. Because one means, well, you're not doing nothing wrong, so it's okay if certain people don't know. While the other is, oh, y'all are doing something sexually wrong, and it's not right that nobody knows. So I taught myself the difference between the two. It's like if you are in my situation, that I'm in now, I'm okay with having private sex. I'm not okay with having secret sex. I'm okay with having private relationships, but I'm not okay with having secret relationships. I'm okay with private dating. I'm not okay with secret dating. I'm okay with private romance. I'm not okay with secret romance. Because private and secret are not the same. Secret means, in this case, that romantically, y'all are just crazy and stupid. Private means sanity and prudence combined. That's also what I taught myself. I now live a life of romantic accountability and sexual accountability. Back then, there was no romantic accountability and no sexual accountability. So now I am I now live a life of romantic responsibility and sexual responsibility. Back then, I was living a life of sexual irresponsibility, romantic irresponsibility. So, it's a very short episode today, but I felt like it is time for me to move sexually forward. I'm not going sexually backwards. Time for me to go romantically forward. I'm not going romantically backwards. And here are my closing statements. When you don't protect your children, don't think monsters will, because they'll cause more unprotection, more endangerment for your children. Don't think that a rapist will sexually protect your children, because they will cause sexual lack of safety for your children. So this is a question. How do you sexually forgive yourself? For sexually self-forgiveness exercises, right? Phase one, sexual acknowledgement and sexual accountability. Sexually explore what's sexually happening, sexually acknowledge it. Emotionally sexually speaking and cognitively sexually speaking. Usually the surfacing of sexual self-blame is the first sexual sign that we have sexually hurt ourselves or sexually hurt someone else or sexually violated our sexual values in some sexual ways. I never committed any sex crimes, and I never slept with anyone that's ever committed any sex crimes. I just want to say that. We may sexually experience feelings of sexual guilt, sexual regret, or sexual remorse. Part of this sexual self-forgiveness exercise is sexually recognizing these sexual emotions and resisting sexual urges to sexually suppress, sexually repress, sexually ignore, or sexually minimize them. Instead, treat these sexual feelings as sexually important guides and sexual teachers. This phase involves a sexually grounding or sexually centering practice so that you can sexually engage in the sexual process of sexual self-forgiveness. Sexually consider what sexually helps you feel sexually grounded in the sexual reality of the sexual present moment. For example, putting on meditation music and rewriting your sexual autobiography. Sexually spend time in a sexual practice that sexually truly grounds you and sexually enables you to sexually arrive in a more sexually centered, sexually grounded, sexually clear-headed place. Phase two, seek sexual understanding with sexual self-compassion. Once you come to a more sexually settled place, sexually reflect on the sexual reality of what sexually happened. Sexually slow down the sexual tape of your sexual memory and sexually try to sexually remember all of what sexually transpired, sexually connecting with all of the sexual sensory details. Create a sexual, deeper sense of sexual empathy by sexually imagining what was this sexually like for the other person or the other people, even if you were sexually hurt too. You may sexually find that some sexual details are more sexually painful than others, but sexually try to sexually stay with those sexual emotions. as best you sexually can. And if it feels too sexually overwhelming, sexually pause and sexually come back to this, sexually honoring where you sexually are in the sexual process. This may be a sexual phase you sexually return to for quite some sexual time. One sexual aspect of sexually understanding with sexual self-compassion to sexually honor and sexually remember the sexual context in which those sexual actions sexually occurred. Was there sexually anything that made you sexually vulnerable to certain sexual behaviors, such as a sexual illness, sexual sleep deprivation, or a recent sexual stressor? Was it a past sexual emotional trauma or sexual hurt activated, sexually leading you to be sexually angry, sexually guarded, sexually defensive, or sexually critical? What was the sexual influence of personal sexual values, cultural sexual norms, and sexual expectations? Sexually strive to sexually describe the sexual entirety of the sexual circumstances in a sexually objective, sexually factual, sexually non-judgmental, and sexually self-compassionate way. Remember that we all sexually hurt others. I'm not talking about sex crimes. Even the people we sexually love the most. We may not sexually feel deserving of sexual forgiveness, and not allowing sexual forgiveness can be a way of sexually punishing ourselves. Phase 3. Make sexual amends and sexual repair. We cannot sexually self-forgive until we have made sexual efforts as best we sexually can to make sexual amends and sexually repair the sexual situation. Muster the sexual courage and sexual willingness to face the sexual truth and sexually repair whatever sexual harm we have sexually caused. There are sexual easy truths and there are sexual hard truths. It says, try to make sexual amends in a sexual way that sexually resonates with this, with the person or people, and is sexually connected to the sexual transgression. Now, part of the sexual repair process also means accepting sexual consequences sexually gracefully and without sexual defensiveness. Someone may not sexually wish to be in our sex lives anymore, or may sexually need sexual time and sexual space away. Honor their sexual needs in those ways. If someone is not sexually open to your sexual amends and sexual repair, get sexually creative about how to sexually achieve this. For example, write a sexual letter that you don't mail, or sexually send a sexual respect note and sexual kindness to them. I'm not saying write sexual juicy penmanship. What I'm talking about is writing down how you could have sexually treated them better without sexually disgracing them and without sexually disgracing yourself. It says, while it may be sexually harder to sexually forgive ourselves when we haven't received sexual forgiveness, there's a sexual difference between seeking sexual forgiveness from someone and or others and our sexual process of sexual self-forgiveness. Sexual self-forgiveness is for ourselves sexually, to be in sexual alignment with ourselves sexually speaking, and sexually able to still sexually find our sexual innate goodness even with our sexually harmful actions. Again, I'm not talking about sex crimes. Lastly, phase 4, Sexually engaged in sexually committed action. Sexual immediate repair is not the only sexual goal. The sexual practice of sexual self-forgiveness. How can we sexually learn from our sexual mistakes, sexual wrongs, and make different sexual choices in the sexual future? Sexually dedicating ourselves to not causing further sexual suffering. Sexual committed action may also sexually mean sexually returning to the sexual practice of sexual self-forgiveness again and again, sexually speaking. So, the path to sexual self-forgiveness, sexual next steps. Sexual self-forgiveness could be a sexually transformative path. Sexually woven through these four sexual phases, we sexually embrace the sexual values of sexual bravery, sexual self-compassion, sexual acceptance, sexual integrity, sexual commitment. I've also learned sexual body awareness to help us sexually center ourselves and live in a sexually present, focused, and sexually embodied way, even the sexual midst of sexual stress. Decreasing our sexual stress response so we can sexually assess sexual intuition and sexually connect to our sexual needs. Value sexual clarification to sexually guide our sexual decisions about sexually prioritizing our sexual time, sexual attention, and sexual energy. Sexual self-compassion to sexually soften our harsh sexual inner critics and sexually facilitate sexual growth following sexual mistakes and sexual wrongs. So that's my sexual science and sexual soul of building sexual resilience. But I recognize that in my case, there was some sexual resilience, but for the most part, there wasn't. I would say that there is, I've experienced sexual redemption because of sexual repentance. And I mean that non-religiously. I give myself sexual grace, sexual mercy. And lastly, as I conclude this episode, I sexually bless because I do not sexually curse. I'm a sexual blessing, I'm a sexual miracle, I'm a sexual sign and wonder, and I'm a sexual breakthrough. That is who I truly am. Sexually speaking, erotically speaking, sensually speaking, romantically speaking, and interpersonally speaking. I'm not a sexual enemy of myself. I am a sexual true friend to myself.